Kids.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Dan Friedel, Bruce Alpert, and Jill Robbins. Later, Alice Bryant and Pete Musto will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, a 60-year-old man in Singapore is under investigation for putting toothpicks into a seat on a public bus. Police in Singapore are describing the incident as a suspected case of mischief. Through extensive questioning and with the help of video evidence, officers established the identity of the suspect, a police statement said this week. The man could receive a 2-year jail sentence if he is found guilty. The Reuters news agency says pictures of 3 toothpicks sticking up from the bus seat were published on Facebook in July. A Facebook user said she saw the 3 small sticks just as she was preparing to sit down. She urged other users to look closely at their seat before sitting down. Her message was shared more than 2,500 times. Singapore has one of the lowest crime rates in the world. Yet one of the government's public information signs reads, "Low crime doesn't mean no crime." Judges are known for taking firm action against violators of minor crimes. Those found guilty of damaging or destroying property have been sentenced to canings, beatings with a stick. The wealthy city-state bans the import of chewing gum, in part to keep public spaces clean. 2 years ago, a smoker was fined about $14,550 for throwing cigarette ends out of a window of his home. The police said investigations into the case of the toothpicks were continuing. The crime carries a punishment of up to 2 years in jail, a fine, or both.
A scientist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology says people will not be able to live in parts of South Asia by the year 2100 if little is done to stop climate change. El-Fati El-Tahir studies the world's climate. He was among the writers of a recently published report in the journal Science Advances. He said, "The heat wave intensity will reach magnitudes that have not been observed before." El-Tahir's study takes humidity into consideration, along with heat. The researchers believe the combination of the heat and humidity will make areas in South Asia difficult to live in. The researchers used a measurement called wet bulb temperature, It is based on air temperature and the amount of water in the air. A very high wet bulb temperature prevents humans from being able to cool themselves by sweating. The researchers say that if the wet bulb temperature reaches 35 degrees Celsius, it would feel like an air temperature of 72 degrees Celsius. That would make it difficult for humans to cool down, even in the shade. Parts of the world where there is poverty, large populations, and heat and humidity would be in danger. That includes places in South Asia, such as the Ganges River Valley, northeastern India, and Bangladesh. Other areas that might be affected are the eastern coast of India, the Chota Nagpur Plateau, northern Sri Lanka, and the Indus Valley of Pakistan. The researchers said people in those areas would be in danger within about 50 years if unlimited heat-trapping gases continue to be put into the atmosphere. Alexis Berg is a hydroclimatologist at Princeton University. He was not involved in the study. He said that the temperatures in South Asia would not remain high permanently, but even a short heat wave could be deadly. The researchers also noted the possibility that heat-trapping gases will not be reduced at all, but continue to be released into the atmosphere. Scientists call this worst-case scenario RCP 8.5. The study's writers said that if RCP 8.5 takes place, about 30% of the world's population would regularly be exposed to dangerous temperatures. Matthew Huber is a climate scientist at Purdue University in the state of Indiana. He was not involved with the study. However, he called RCP 8.5 a death sentence for a large fraction of the world. But he also said that kind of climate change can be avoided. The choice is very much ours, he said. It does not require impossible effort to avoid RCP 8.5. Huber said the study was more complete than earlier reports about heat. Berg, the Princeton scientist, said there is still time to prevent the worst-case scenario. He also said, however, that without change, the heat will continue to get more dangerous. I'm Dan Friedel.
What does an American look like? Nearly 1,300 Americans, mostly college students, were asked that question for a recent study in psychological science. They were shown pictures of people and asked by University of Washington researchers who looked American to them. The most surprising answer was how people saw Asian Americans. overweight Asian Americans were more likely to be seen as Americans than normal weight Asian Americans, the researchers said. Researchers who worked on the study believe this all fits into common stereotypes. A stereotype is a belief, often untrue, that many have about a group of people. And one common stereotype is that Asians are thin, and most Americans are heavy, the researchers said.
Sapna Cherian is a co-author of the study. She also teaches psychology at the University of Washington. She said the findings show an unusual benefit for overweight Asian Americans. She noted that overweight people often face discrimination. But Cherian said that being overweight makes Asian Americans seem more American. That makes them less likely to face discrimination directed at those believed to be foreign, she said. Cherian said her interest in ethnic and racial stereotypes goes back to her youth in Urbana, Illinois. She is Indian American and remembers people would praise her mother because she spoke English so well. It was as if they did not expect a woman who appeared to come from a foreign country to speak English, she said. Cherian also remembers worrying when friends would come over to her house. She was embarrassed that her family served Indian food. The food seemed different compared to American favorites, such as pizza and Doritos. The research on how people see Asian Americans is a follow-up of her 2011 research. It found Asian Americans were 3 times as likely to order American food after being asked if they spoke English than if they had not been asked that question. The suggestion is that maybe people avoid foods that are stereotypical of their ethnic group so that they would fit in better, Cherian said. This is not always a good thing for Asian Americans. She notes that traditional American food often contains more calories and fat than many Asian dishes.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that 34.5% of white Americans are considered obese or very overweight. For Asian Americans, the percentage is 11.7%. For African Americans, the percentage of obesity is 48%, and for Latino Americans, the percentage is 42.5%. The New University of Washington study showed people photos of people from different racial and ethnic groups to see if weight influenced their opinions. Among the questions asked, how likely is this person to have been born outside the U.S.? Another, how likely is it that this person's native language is English? Weight did make a difference in how people decided whether Asian Americans were Americans. Those questioned by the University of Washington researchers also looked at pictures of Latinos, whites, and African Americans.
The researchers found that weight did not influence whether they saw whites, African Americans, and Latinos as being Americans. This supported their opinion that people believed to be from foreign countries, where people are believed to be mostly thin, are considered more likely to be American if they are overweight. The researchers noted that many Americans believe Latinos are overweight. As a result, overweight Latinos are not seen as more likely to be Americans, as was the case with Asian Americans. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Bruce Alpert.
This is What's Trending Today. The St. Louis Cardinals and Kansas City Royals each have less than 50 games to play this season. Both teams hope to win enough games to play for the championship of North American baseball later in the year. The Cardinals and Royals have a long-standing rivalry. It is sometimes called the Show Me Series. That is because both teams play their home games in the American state of Missouri, known as the Show Me State. This week, the Cardinals and Royals have been playing against each other in a series of games. But it is not the usual Show Me Series rivalry that people are talking about. Instead, they are talking about a new battle that took place during the game Wednesday night. The battle was between a member of the Cardinals' field crew and a cat. 20-year-old Lucas Hackman is a college student. He works at the Cardinals Busch Stadium in St. Louis. On Wednesday night, he and other crew members discovered a small gray cat running around on the field in the middle of the game. It was in the sixth inning. The Royals were leading the Cardinals 5-4. The Cardinals' Yadier Molina was at bat, and the bases were loaded. But before Molina could swing at the ball, the cat ran onto the field. It walked up to Royals' Lorenzo Cain in the outfield. The player looked down and smiled at the small creature. Lucas Hackman quickly ran onto the field to remove the animal so that the game could continue. The cat tried to escape, but Hackman was able to catch it. However, the cat was not happy. It began to attack the man, cutting into the skin and biting his hands and fingers. Hackman appeared to be in pain, but continued to hold on to the cat. The crowd laughed and cheered. One television announcer said, "You've got to hold him by the back of the neck, just like the mama does." Hackman and the cat did make it off the field together, and the game continued. The Royals pitcher then threw the ball to Molina. He hit it into deep left field. The ball landed in the crowd. It was a home run. Because the bases were loaded, the Cardinals scored 4 runs. Suddenly, the Royals were losing 8-5. When the game ended, St. Louis had won. People who follow the Cards have nicknamed the animal Rally Cat. A rally is when a player or team that has been playing poorly begins to play well. The hashtag Rally Cat soon became a trending topic on Facebook and Twitter. Hackman, a big Cards fan himself, did not have a good night. He had to go to the hospital because of the injuries he suffered. Thursday morning, Hackman told a St. Louis radio station that he has never owned a cat. He did not expect the cat to bite him, he said. But obviously, I was being kind of dumb there. Rally Cat is not the only one getting attention on social media. Hackman's Twitter account has blown up and doubled in followers. Hackman said he does not know what happened to the Rally Cat after he carried it off the field, but in his words, hopefully we'll be reunited soon. And that's what's trending today. I'm Anna Mateo.
From VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. Popular music can teach you a lot about the English language. You may not realize it, but musicians are actually teaching you about English grammar in each song they perform. Consider this song by the famous reggae artist Bob Marley. It tells about the need for equality and justice.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Pacific, get up, stand up. Don't give up.
This song is called Get Up, Stand Up. It shows you how to use the three-part phrasal verb stand up for. To stand up for means to defend someone or something with words. Today, we explore three-part phrasal verbs, idiomatic expressions that can be difficult for students of English to understand.
As you may remember from other everyday grammar programs, a phrasal verb is a verb with two or more words. Most phrasal verbs contain just two words, a verb and a preposition, such as look up, which means to research or to search for. Look is the verb, and up is the preposition. Note that look and up are words with literal meanings. In some situations, you would use the literal meaning of look and up. For example, you can say, "When I looked up, I saw a beautiful bird." In that sentence, look means to direct your eyes to a specific direction, and up means toward the sky or top of the room. But when used as a phrasal verb, look up becomes idiomatic, which means you cannot understand their meaning from the individual meanings of the separate words. Instead, when the words are put together as phrasal verbs, they mean something else. While many phrasal verbs consist of just two words, there are several that have three words. Three-part phrasal verbs have a verb and two particles. A particle is a word that must appear with another word to communicate meaning. In Bob Marley's song, the main verb stand has two particles, up and for. When these three words are combined, they become a three-part phrasal verb. Here is an easy way to remember how to use three-part phrasal verbs. All three words always appear together, and the order of the three words never changes. So, although using these verbs may seem daunting at first, do not fear. If you learn the most common ones, you will be able to recognize them and use them yourself.
Three-part phrasal verbs are important if you want to express yourself in English in the most natural way possible. You can use many of these verbs in both casual and formal English. For example, the meeting lasted 3 hours. Now I need to catch up on my work. To catch up on is both casual and formal. It means to do something you have not had time to do earlier. But some three-part phrasal verbs are more common in casual English than in formal written English. Listen for a three-part phrasal verb in this song by the blues singer B.B. King.
Oh, I'm sorry for you, baby. But you know, I just can't put up with you.
This song, called Get These Blues Off Me, uses the verb to put up with, which means to tolerate or accept something unpleasant. In English, many songs about love or love lost use the verb to put up with. But you probably would not use this verb in formal situations. For example, if you reported your noisy neighbors to police, you might want to avoid saying, "I have put up with the noise for a long time." Instead, you might say, "I have tolerated the noise for a long time."
In social, personal, and professional communication, three-part phrasal verbs are often the most natural and least wordy choice. That is why we use these verbs every day. For example, when we have not seen friends or family members for a long time, we want to catch up with them. We want to learn about the new things happening in their lives. Note the similarity between catch up with and catch up on. Yet the meanings are different. Changing any word of a three-part phrasal verb creates a new meaning. A work situation where you might use a three-part phrasal verb is when you run out of time. In the workplace, you can also run out of ideas or supplies. To run out of means to have used all of something. Speaking of running out of time, we are almost out of time for this program. So here are three ideas to help you with three-part phrasal verbs.
Tip number one. The first thing to remember is that these verbs are inseparable, meaning that the three words cannot be separated by an object or any other part of speech. Bob Marley did not say, "Stand up your rights for," or "Stand your rights up for." And, as we noted earlier, the words will always appear in the same order. Bob Marley also did not say, "Stand for up your rights." Tip number two, changing any part of three-part phrasal verbs changes their meanings. Remember that the verbs catch up with and catch up on do not mean the same thing. Tip number three, now a final point. The examples we have used today are from American English. Many of these verbs are the same in British English and other forms of English. But remember that some of them may have a different meaning or may not be used at all outside of the United States. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Pete Musto.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.